The reason people aren't financially free is they don't know what to do and they don't know where to start. I want you to join Joey and I at the Virtual Inner Circle Live, April the 4th through the 6th, as we share with you the exact answers to those questions. We only do this event one time per year. I don't want you to miss out. Go to wealthwallstreet.com/live and enter promo code podcast. When you're at this event, you're going to get your investor DNA. You're going to get access to up to 6 different passive income strategies. So you know, leaving this event, exactly what to do, taking our decades of knowledge so that you can start becoming financially free. Go to wealthwallstreet.com/live and enter the promo code podcast.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy, Morgan. All right, so Russ, I, as a kid, grew up wondering, how could I possibly get a money machine? Like something you just walk up to and it just spits out dollars. I mean, do you have the same dreams growing up?
Well, my parents would say, Russ, money doesn't grow on trees. And I'd be like, I wish it did. You know, like looking outside, like, wouldn't that be cool if there was a tree outside with money on it?
Well, I feel like today's episode has given me hope.
Yeah.
It's possible.
It is possible.
It's not only possible, like people are doing this.
Did you know that you actually can put something in an ATM machine other than a piece of plastic and get money out of it?
Did you know also that all ATMs are not owned by banks?
Well, here's a funny thing, because we've all had that moment in time where we've had to go to the ATM machine, and I got plenty of stories. I don't know how many I really want to share.
Do we have time for that? I don't know.
We got A, B, or C, like outside of a bar, inside of a casino, or in Europe. Which one of those three do you want?
Let's go Europe. Let's go across the sea.
All right. So I'm in Europe. This is like second year college. I'm over there and I've worked with my dad. I've told you that my dad was in construction.
Yeah.
I'd worked for a summer with him and he was like, okay, so what I'm going to do is when you're in Europe, I'm just going to go put money in your account and then you can just take it out over time. He's like, I don't have a bunch of it. I can pay you right now. I'll just put it in over time. I was like, that's fine. No big deal. So I had a couple $100. I'm backpacking across Europe in a tent now. And I'm talking about living off $5 to $10 a day was that I was showing up to campgrounds after dark because we learned if you show up after 5 p.m., Joey, that you actually, that the person managing the front gate is gone. So we'd then roll up in there after dark, put our tent down, you know, pop that baby up. We didn't have to pay the $2 for the stay. I mean, that's how cheap I was. I was going in there where they had the stalls where you could take showers. You could put a dollar into the machine and get a hot shower. Nah, I can't tell you. I did not take a hot shower the whole month I was there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was just cold. I mean, I think they ran it through like a refrigerant. I mean, it was so stinking cold. All right, but here's the ATM machine story. So I'm going to the ATM trying to get money out, and I would go, and it would say, insufficient funds. You don't have money in here. And I'm like, pissed. And so I call my dad. I'm like, Dad, I thought you were going to put money in there. He's like, okay, I'm going to do it. And so I'd go back like an hour later and check it, and it would say insufficient funds. I bet I went to this ATM in a period of like 3 to 4 days, 20 times, never having any money. And my dad's like, I'm putting money in there. And I'm like, it's telling me there's nothing. Well, come to find out, Joey, every time I went and tried to draft money and it didn't have it in there, it was charging an overdraft fee of like $25.
Oh, no.
Multiply that times 20. That's what was sucking all the money out of this stupid account.
Wow. Before it even got there, it was debiting out.
Therein lies when you listen to our episode today with Dave Zook, the real asset investor, he's going to be talking about how you can make money from those fees from suckers like me, where people go and they use ATMs. And now you and I don't use ATMs nearly the way that we used to. And he's going to actually talk about who ATMs are for. I mean, like, who are the end users? Are they going away? Is it something? I know we're talking about a cashless society now. Is that something that is a reality? And if it is, how long would it take us if we were investing in ATMs before we get our money out?
Exactly, Russ. I want to ask Dave those questions. Let's dive into this episode with Dave Zook.
Are you looking for ways to implement ideas, get exposure to new ones, and be surrounded by people on the same journey as you? Joey, where can they go to do that?
Go to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/community. You can join for free today. Welcome into the show. We have a very special guest today. The most unique, I think, idea we've had along the way. Dave Zook. Dave, thanks for being on.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah, Dave. This has been a long time coming. One of our guests, a regular attendees, Mark Hargucci, had mentioned that he'd been doing some investing with you guys through this ATM machine. And people are like, what is ATM investing? How do I get involved in that? That sounds awesome, Mark. And I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. You're with the Real Asset Investor, right? That's something that I think we all get behind. We love real assets. What does that even mean? What is a real asset in your mind?
Real asset is just like what it sounds. It's a real tangible asset. It's a building. It's a hard, tangible thing. It's an asset. So when you look at some of the asset classes that we're involved in, multifamily, self-storage, ATMs, those are all real assets. You can go to them, you can touch them, feel them, kick them.
Yeah. Well, and there's something special about a real asset. Not only can you touch them, see them, and feel them, but also real assets have consistency within them. And I know that you've said this to us off air, that these assets not only come with tax benefits associated with them, but also they come with cash flow. Talk about the importance of those two things in investing in real assets.
Well, number one, you want to invest in a real asset that provides a good stream of cash flow. You never want to lead with, you know, depreciation or you know, from the tax side. You want to make sure the investment makes sense. We do a lot of, you know, if you look at many of our investments, they normally have those two components. Starts with cash flow, and then it follows up with, you know, tax or depreciation, a tax benefit. So in the you know, let's just take a self-storage facility or an apartment building. An apartment building, you can get creative. You can use cost segregation studies. You can use bonus depreciation. So I really, you know, got into the space early on simply because I had a tax problem. And so when you combine the two, you start with cash flow and then you add the tax component, it can be really compelling.
All right. Now, forgive me if I want to jump straight in, but I think I've always dreamed of having a money machine, you know, like you just go to it, it spits out cash. So isn't that how it works? ATM investing, is that how it works? You just buy this machine, it just spits out cash.
Well, there's a few more pieces. There's a few more things involved than just that, but that's part of it.
Well, I mean, Joe,
sign me up.
Well, I mean, literally, that's what an ATM machine does. It spits out cash, but you have to put a plastic card in and it spits out cash associated with your account. But somebody's got to put cash in the deal.
That's right.
So talk about that just on that basic level. For someone who doesn't understand ATM investing at all, I've heard you say that there's two different spaces out there. There's mom and pop and there's institutional. Where do you guys play and how does that, you know, how does the average individual get involved in those type of things?
So you're right. There are two different sort of players. The one is the mom and pop operator. They can manage 150, 200 machines, and then they sort of cap out 150, 200 machines in a 50-mile radius. They're running around supplying the cash, doing the maintenance work. This is kind of a touchy business. They, you know, there's real cash involved. So you can't just You know, it's not a business where you want to have some employees on payroll doing a lot of that stuff for you. Right. So you're either on one side of the table or you're on the other. The institutional players, they all have audited third-party firms doing their maintenance, doing their, you know, supplying the machines with cash. A lot of times that's with the armored vehicles. Brinks is one of them.
Yeah.
But the biggest part of the difference there is on the mom and pop operator side, many of those locations are in restaurants and bars. The institutional grade locations, I'll give you some examples. When you're looking at, say, a portfolio of McDonald's, in, let's say there's a couple hundred McDonald's in, say, New York City, or you're talking about, several hundred Walgreens, you're talking about chain delis, you know, high foot traffic chain delis, those are considered institutional grade locations. So there's never been, to my knowledge, there's never been someone who sort of acts as a hybrid where they go into the institutional space, and that's what our firm does. We go into the institutional space and we buy large institutional grade portfolios at ATMs, and then we bring them back down to Main Street and give regular Main Street investors the opportunity to invest in institutional grade location. So that's sort of the difference between the two players. You can make good money doing either or. So it really has to do with how you want to be an investor in this space.
But from your perspective, people are much more passive than the mom and pop seems a lot more active, hands-on. So yours is more passive, correct?
Right on.
Okay. So give us an idea. I mean, isn't that what we're about, though, Russ? Is ultimately, some of us have more money than we have time, and we're trying to get that time back, and we're trying to trade it, our money, to be smart and get the most out of it so that it comes back with friends. That's kind of how I would explain it, right? So walk us through some of the challenges. You already mentioned that the two models may have some different challenges, but in terms of getting involved in ATM investing, talk about like how much it takes to get involved in it. Talk about some of the challenges people may have in order to even step into this.
So from a regular passive investor, there's really no involvement, and that's the beauty of being an investor in a fund where you've got, you know, institutional grade locations rather than where you're a mom and pop operator. That's you're running a business in that scenario. So in the event that you're a passive investor in a fund, there's really no involvement. I mean, you get your monthly ACH, you get your annual K-1, that's about it. You can call in, you can email in, occasionally check on stuff, but you really don't have to have any active involvement in it at all.
So how many ATMs are you guys managing nationwide right now?
There are several thousand.
Several thousand. And so what are the big challenges facing you? I mean, obviously, one of the things I thought of was, we're in a situation with the coronavirus right now that where, you know, dollars are not being accepted in certain locations. Outside of that, I'd love you here to talk about that a little bit, but also what are other challenges facing the ATM investing space?
So early on in the COVID pandemic, I'm talking, you know, February, March timeframe, we saw a big uptick in ATM use. People were running for cash. Later on, when we got deeper into it, I'm talking March, April, we saw a small decline in transaction volume across our portfolios. And some of that was simply because some of our stores closed down. We were fortunate. We had built the portfolio to where most of our locations were in essential businesses. That's also the difference between many mom and pop operator locations and institutional grade locations. You're talking, you know, essential businesses. But look, we didn't come out of it totally unfazed. I mean, we had airport exposure. I mean, that's normally considered a really good institutional grade location. In the last couple of months, not so much. Right. So, you know, but when we look across our portfolio, we did a thorough analysis on across our portfolios, and we in June we ended up the month year over year down 1.35 to 1.5% across our four portfolios. So that gives you sort of a sense. I mean, you know, to us, with having a nice healthy buffer built in just for times like this, to only dip 1.3 to 1.5% to us, that, you know, we were perfectly happy with that.
Well, and no investment is without potential effects that we're out of control of. One thing I feel like we may have even gone too far without asking the very simplest question is, investing in ATMs, how does one actually benefit from that? Like, what is the actual process of receiving a return on ATM investing?
So when someone goes up to the machine, and I'll explain this to you guys, because it may sound pretty basic, but the fact is many of us have long ago converted to plastic. And so we're not our own avatar. We're not our target market. We are primarily going into areas where there's heavy EBT card use, lower income folks, these unbanked or underbanked folks, immigrant workers. I mean, you're talking, the list goes on, and it, you know, it's one of the fastest growing demographics in the country. So when you go up to an ATM machine and swipe your card, you're going to get hit with a $2 or $3 surcharge. And you could ask the question, well, wait a minute, who's getting that $2 or $3? Many people think that ATMs are owned by banks. Right. Well, that is very, you know, that is, you know, unless you're in a bank branch location, and sometimes they don't even own those. So unless you're in a bank branch location, many times you're not, you know, the bank has nothing to do with that ATM. I just, you know, I guess because there's technology and a money machine and there's cash involved, people think that the banks own them. That's not the case. But so that $2 or $3 surcharge goes to somebody, and that somebody in this case is us. You know, so they primarily, those types of ATM locations, institutional grade, those are owned by either institutions, private equity firms, or hedge funds.
Today's content is so awesome, man. I just wanted to make sure you knew that there's access to the Q&A from today's episode at wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/community.
Yeah, you need to be a part of this movement if these are the types of things you want to learn about and be surrounded by over 3,000 other people on the same journey. Let's get back to the episode.
So for you guys are supplying the ATM machine that has an expense. What does a typical machine that you put on the street today cost?
So typical machine for us, and these range pretty widely because number one, there are some machines that we put out that have multiple interfaces. They've got, you know, you can have several different users running a transaction at the same time, depending on the, you know, how high a volume the transaction is in that location. But you can be talking, you know, $15,000 to $17,000 for a machine.
Oh wow! And I would imagine the software that goes in those machines is probably a big part of this, right? So how often are you having to update the software and keep that going?
We're updating software. I mean, it, you know, depending on what kind of new technology comes out. I mean, we're updating the software, you know, on probably an annual or biannual basis. Okay. And you know, we're able, some of that we're able to do offsite, some of it we got to do on site. But when we get an ATM machine in, we're taking the factory, many times we're taking the factory vault out and putting a new bank grade vault in. We're, you know, adding, we're putting some better technology in it. We're adding cassettes because of the volume, cassettes meaning we can hold more cash because of the volume of our locations. So we're bringing them into the factory, and we're putting our own twist on them.
That's right. And so then also whenever, so there's different factors in which that's bringing in income. You have some expenses. Are you paying rent at these, like you mentioned, McDonald's and airports and even bank branches at some point? Are you just paying rent for the space, or do you share in revenue with them? How does that work?
Yes. So part of that surcharge transaction, part of that you know, the margin in that transaction goes to pay for the lease on that location. So you can look at it in kind of a three-way split. You got the investor, you got the management team, and you got the real estate. So that's how the kind of the margin gets split up. But yes, some of that margin goes to pay for that lease.
So as a as an investor, just let's walk through an example. I know that every investor that deals with this needs to have different criteria, or whatever. But first of all, when someone comes to you and you mention a fund and this type of space, is this a like a private placement type fund where someone would have to be an accredited investor to participate?
That is correct.
And an accredited investor is someone who meets what criteria?
They make either $200,000 a year and have for the last 2 years and expect to this year, or they have $1 million in assets, not including their personal residence.
All right, perfect. So an accredited investor comes to you guys and they say, all right, I've got a block of money. What is a typical, like just to get in, and then just walk me through an example of how that person what they should expect. What does it look like for somebody? Because that's the hard part. I think people are like, well, I don't even understand how this works. They're like, Joey is a money machine. I just collect money.
Who doesn't want that? Come on.
So when an investor comes in, one unit is considered either six or seven machines, depending on the portfolio. So the portfolio we're working on right now is six ATM machines. The investment is $104,000. So an investor comes in with $104,000. They sign the private placement docs. Their machines get put into their location where they're going to set. The machine sits there for a full 12 or for a full month, and then the investor gets paid the 25th of the following month, and they get paid out monthly. And what we do is our management company makes a commitment to an investor saying, look, your unit, your six or seven machines, depending on what fund you're in, your six machines, we're going to give you a certain amount of transaction volume, and your portion of the transaction, your portion of the surcharge is, let's say, whatever, 70 cents. And so we come up with a committed number, and that number has been for the last couple of years. It can vary a little bit between funds, but that number has been $2,125 per month. And we're set up on an 84-month contract basis. So you get 84 monthly payments of $2,125, which comes to, if you totally take out any of the tax impact, well, first of all, there's three numbers. Number one, your first number is 24.5% cash on cash return. But when you consider the fact that you lose most of your value of the equipment over that 7 year period, now it becomes an 18.6% all in internal rate of return, includes your tax impact. Remember, this is you depreciate it. You depreciate your equipment down to zero. So there is no depreciation recapture like say if you were to sell, you know, let's say if you were to invest in a multifamily apartment where you sell the asset and you got depreciation recaptured. There is no recapture. Now, the third number is, let's say you totally took out any of the tax impact and you put it into a self-directed self-directed IRA. Now your cash on cash return is 10.4%. Again, that's considering the loss of value of your equipment over that 7 year period.
So I'm going to recap that for Joey in case he missed that. Joey, you're going to put in $104,000. You're going to expect to receive $2,125 back every month for the next 7 years, which if you added all that together is about $178,500.
Yep.
And so is it based upon my six machines, or my six machines are just kind of my own personal for depreciation purposes, but I participate as a whole? So if you happen to put my six machines in, you know,
airport,
the six airports, my 2125, you're going to put a decimal between the 21 and 25, maybe. Right. So how do I, is it just the results of my six machines, or is it like my six machines go in a big pool and then it's all kicked out? So there's some winners and some losers, but we're all kind of averaging.
Your six machines go into a pool and you get out, you get paid a blended performance of the fund.
Gotcha. And is there any, you mentioned 84 months. So at the end of 7 years, we're done? Is that just you base that based upon the lifetime, life expectancy of the actual machine itself?
Yeah. So while it's not based on life expectancy of the machine, it's the way that we have our contract set up, but it also lines up fairly well with the lifespan of machine. I mean, you could get, 8, 10, 12 years out of machine if you would push it. But, when you get toward the end of that life cycle, you're spending your maintenance costs go up, obviously. So it sort of lines up, but no, the contract for the location agreement is set up on a 7-year contract.
Gotcha. So this is the end of the deal with the person that you're renting the space from, the real estate.
Correct. At the end of 7 years, the end of your 84th month, we sell your ATMs at fair market value. You get the money. It's very little. It's $2,000 or $3,000. We have it projected at, $1,400, but we've actually had a lot of people going through, we've had people go on full cycle and they're getting $2,000 or $3,000 for their equipment, but still very little compared to what you originally started with.
So $2,000 or $3,000 per machine or $2,000 or $3,000 for the 6 machines total?
For the 6 machines.
Gotcha.
So very, you're getting very, it's almost like investing in a 7-year-old laptop.
There you go. Well, Joey's got 2 of those. I know what those look like.
What are the potential downfalls of ATM investing outside of obviously what you mentioned? And I'm actually surprised that it's only a 1.35% decline year over year due to COVID. Any other kind of things that we're just not thinking about that could be affecting us?
As with any investment, there are risks, and you got to make sure that you're okay with the potential risk. Is there a risk that the US dollar will just totally go away? Maybe. I think it's pretty low. I mean, back in 2012, when I first started investing in ATMs, that was all the noise that was out there was cash use is in decline, cash is going away, everybody's starting to use credit card, da 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 da, all that stuff. Well, today, 8-9 years later, there's more cash in circulation than there's, by more than 50% more in circulation than there was back then. Our user base has grown a lot since then. So they still have that talk out there where, cash is going away. If you believe cash is going away in the next 3 years, don't invest in the ATM business. There are ways, here's the thing. When you consider the cash flow and your tax impact, you're getting your principal back in your pocket. You're really getting all your cash back off the table in right around 3 years. Now you got 4 years of free cash flow. So if you think, so your real risk is in that first 3 years. You think cash is going away in 3 years, don't invest in this space. Now, there's things that we're doing that is helping to monetize other areas and other ways that ATMs are being used and will be used in the future.
What's a couple examples of that?
One is marketing. Our machines go out with a brand new big, looks like a giant iPad on the top of the ATM. That's set up to where it's marketing. It's got a marketing message that scrolls through, and you can get 3 or 4 of them on there, but it's also a data collection center. So you guys walk into a convenience store. I can tell that you're white males. I can tell that you're, whatever, in your 30s. I can tell that I've held your gaze for, 11 seconds. I'm collecting data. And the reason that's important is now we can go to a Fortune 500 company and say, hey, we got, 10,000 machines across this 200-mile radius. We'll blanket this area with your Pepsi ads or your Coke ads, and we can guarantee you 10 million impressions. So that's why that's important. And, we've got the demographic, we've got the eyeballs, we can prove we held your gaze, and all that stuff is important when you talk about marketing. We're looking at, getting marketing revenue in the future. We can wrap the machines and get some marketing revenue. There's cryptocurrency compatible machine. Many of our machines are cryptocurrency compatible. There's the old Western Union model where an immigrant can send, you know, they can work up here and they can send money home, but it costs them 10% of their paycheck to send them. Now they can do it for a couple bucks. So there's a lot of different ways you're going to be seeing ATMs used in the future that are, some of those ways are being used right now, but you're going to be seeing many more of those in the future. There's a lot of new technology coming up that, are going to be installed in these machines in the next 2-3 years.
That's some pretty cool stuff there. By the way, did you notice that he said both of us are in our 30s?
Oh. I bring his average down. That's what it is.
Dave, I mean, I know that this is a conversation that can get really deep and
granular.
We want to make sure that this podcast did exactly what it did. It introduced the concept of one, cash flow. Joey, we always talk about the way we stop trading time for money is that we get dollars putting dollars in our pocket, right?
That's right.
And on a monthly basis. So
cash flowing to us, not away from us.
And this is solving one of those things. Now we got to get some rotation here. So every 7 years, we need to keep adding on to this so that way we keep that cash flow going. But I love the concept of a real asset that produces cash flow. It does have some tax benefits to it. Dave, obviously, sounds like you guys are doing an amazing job thinking into the future of how this is, you can get some marketing revenue, how you can help people who are living here from overseas to get dollars back across the pond. I love all of that concepts. There's a lot of questions that we didn't ask that our community is going to want to know. Are you willing to come on next week and do a Q&A with us?
Of course.
Man, that'd be awesome because I feel like that takes the pressure off of me and you, Joey.
Yeah, we are not nearly as smart as our community. So we'll be excited to introduce you to them and have them ask you all the good questions. So, man, if people want to get involved in that or they want to hear more about you, Dave, we're going to actually send them specifically to wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/ATM.
Did you come up with that on your own?
Well, I just had to keep it simple. You know, I know how to spell ATM, and I'm hoping you can too. wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/ATM, and then get all access to the Q&A and as well as more information.
You because you actually have like a report too that they can get when they go to that link, right?
We do, yes. And I'll send it to you. It's a report. It's an easy to read report that I can send to you, and you can send it out to your group.
That'd be awesome. Well, Dave, thank you for taking time out of your day to share a new idea with us, something that I know many of us are excited to dig into even further. So have an amazing day.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on your show.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand, so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.